A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it's one of those questions where the intuitive answer and the engineering answer point in completely opposite directions. He's asking about the safety of old airplanes. You board a 737, you look it up, turns out it's 30 years old, your stomach drops. But cargo operators are snapping up these same airframes, converting them, and flying them for another decade or two. The military's got bombers from the Kennedy administration still flying combat missions. So the question is there actually a hard lifetime limit on an airframe? Or is this just a maintenance problem? And if rigorous maintenance works, what does that tell us about sustainability and the whole newer is better assumption?
The thing that makes this question so good is that it forces you to confront what old actually means for a machine that gets taken apart and inspected down to the rivet every few years. A 30-year-old 737 that's been through a cargo conversion has probably been inspected more thoroughly than a 5-year-old one still carrying passengers. The conversion process itself is a deep structural audit that the passenger version never got.
The plane that makes you nervous is actually the one that's been checked more carefully.
And that's not even the counterintuitive part. The counterintuitive part is what actually ages an airplane. Most people assume it's flight hours, the engines running, the wings flexing, the turbulence. But the primary fatigue driver is pressurization cycles. Every time the cabin goes from sea level pressure to cruising altitude and back, the fuselage expands and contracts like a balloon. That's what accumulates fatigue in the aluminum skin and structure.
A short-haul plane that does 6 hops a day is aging faster than a long-haul plane crossing the Pacific.
A 737 doing Denver to Phoenix 6 times a day is racking up pressurization cycles at 10 times the rate of a 747 doing Los Angeles to Sydney. This is why narrow bodies hit their cycle limits before wide bodies, even though the wide bodies fly more hours. Boeing designed the 737 for a design service goal of 75,000 cycles. The 747 was designed for 35,000. That sounds like the 737 is built to last longer, but it's actually because Boeing knew the 737 would accumulate cycles faster in short-haul service. The design service goal is an economic target. It's the point where the manufacturer says maintenance costs will start climbing enough that replacement becomes worth considering. It's not a hard failure limit.
Design service goal is more of a financial planning number than an engineering expiration date.
That's the crucial distinction, and it's one that the cargo conversion industry has built an entire business model around. When a passenger airline retires a 737 at 25 or 30 years, it's not because the plane is unsafe. It's because the maintenance costs per flight hour are rising, the fuel efficiency is worse than a new one, and the cabin interior looks dated. Passengers want mood lighting and bigger overhead bins. Cargo doesn't care about mood lighting.
Cargo is famously indifferent to ambiance.
Cargo's only aesthetic preference is not being on fire. So what happens is, a 20-year-old 737-800 gets pulled from passenger service, and instead of being scrapped, it goes through a supplemental type certificate process, an STC, that converts it into a freighter. Boeing's program is called the 707-800 BCF, Boeing Converted Freighter. They strip out the passenger interior, install a rigid cargo barrier behind the cockpit that can withstand 9 G's of force, reinforce the floor structure to handle cargo containers instead of seats, and cut a large cargo door into the main deck.
That main deck cargo door is a serious piece of engineering in itself. You're cutting a massive hole in a pressurized fuselage.
That's why the conversion starts with a full teardown inspection. Every inch of the fuselage gets checked for corrosion, for fatigue cracks, for anything that might become a problem. The conversion facility is essentially doing a level of inspection that the plane never received during its passenger career. They find and fix issues that would have remained hidden for years. The converted freighter often leaves the facility in better structural condition than when it was carrying passengers.
Which creates this strange situation where the conversion process is actually a safety upgrade.
It really is. And the economics make it irresistible. Converting a 20-year-old 737-800 costs somewhere in the range of $4 to $5 million. A factory new freighter of comparable size is north of $50 million. The break-even on the conversion is about 3 to 4 years of cargo operations. That's why over 300 conversion slots are booked through 2028 across all the major programs, Boeing, Airbus, and the independent conversion houses. Amazon Air is flying converted 737s, FedEx, DHL. They're all in on this.
These are planes that passengers were flying on 5 years ago, probably without a second thought.
Probably safer now than they were then. There's a piece of data I find really striking. The NTSB looked at accident rates by aircraft age, and there's no correlation between the age of the plane and the likelihood of a fatal accident when you control for maintenance quality. The average age of aircraft involved in fatal accidents is 17 years, which is almost exactly the fleet average. Age alone tells you nothing.
The nervous passenger looking up the tail number and seeing manufactured 1996 is reacting to a number that has no predictive value for safety.
It's a completely understandable reaction. We're wired to associate age with deterioration. Your car gets less reliable as it ages. Your roof needs replacing. But an airplane isn't like those things. It's maintained on a completely different model. Every component has a tracked life limit. At certain intervals, the plane gets taken apart and inspected at a level that would total your car. The maintenance program is the safety feature, not the calendar age.
All right, so that's civil aviation. But Daniel mentioned military aviation, and that's where this gets really extreme. You've got airframes that are old enough to collect Social Security.
The B-52H Stratofortress. First flight, 1961. The airframes flying today were built during the Kennedy administration. The Air Force projects they'll keep flying past 2050. That's nearly 100 years of service. The C-130 Hercules first flew in 1954, and there are C-130s from the 1960s still in active operation, still in production, by the way.
A plane that's been in continuous production for over 70 years. That's a product life cycle that makes the Toyota Corolla look fickle.
The military doesn't have a design life. Retirement trigger the way civil aviation does. They use something called individual aircraft tracking, IAT programs. Every flight cycle is monitored. They measure crack propagation in real time. When a wing center section or an entire wing box needs replacing, they replace it. The B-52 re-engining program awarded a contract to Rolls-Royce in 2021 to replace the original Pratt & Whitney engines. New radar, new cockpit, new communications suite, the airframe is the only original part.
Which raises a philosophical question. If you've replaced the engines, the avionics, the radar, the wiring, and major structural sections, is it still the same airplane?
The Air Force seems to think so. They still paint the same tail numbers on them. But your point gets at something important. What the military is doing is treating the airframe as a platform, not a product. The structure is the one thing that's hard to replace, but even that isn't monolithic. You can replace wing spars, you can replace fuselage sections. The B-52 fleet has gone through multiple life extension programs where they essentially rebuilt the wings.
Israel does this too. Daniel mentioned it in his prompt. The Israeli Air Force has FWIFs and FW-16s from the 1980s that are still frontline combat aircraft.
The FWIFDIN Baz. Baz means Falcon. Those are airframes from the early 80s. They've been through comprehensive life extension programs. New wiring bundles because the original insulation degrades over time. New avionics, new radar systems from the 2020s. Structural members replaced as needed. Israel's situation forces this approach. Constant operational tempo, limited budget for new platforms, and the need to maintain a credible deterrent. You can't just park a squadron and wait for the F-35 order to arrive.
The F-35 delivery timeline has been, let's call it, leisurely.
That's a generous word for it. So the IAF has become genuinely expert at keeping old airframes combat ready. And they're not alone. The U.S. Navy flew F-414 Tomcats for over 30 years. The A-10 Warthog fleet is from the 70s and 80s, and they keep pushing the retirement date back because nothing else does what the A-10 does.
The plane's so ugly, the ground attacks it first.
The plane's so effective at close air support that the Air Force has tried to retire it about 6 times, and Congress keeps saying no. But the point is, the military approach demonstrates that the engineering limits are far beyond what civil aviation treats as the retirement age. The question isn't, can this airframe fly safely? It's, is it economical to keep it flying safely?
That brings us to the sustainability angle that Daniel raised. If you can keep a plane flying safely for 50 or 60 or 100 years, shouldn't you?
The manufacturing carbon footprint of a new narrowbody aircraft is roughly 2,500 tons of CO2 equivalent. That's the aluminum, the composites, the engines, the avionics, the entire supply chain. If you extend the life of an existing airframe by 10 or 15 years through conversion and rigorous maintenance, you avoid that entire production footprint. The carbon has already been spent. You're amortizing it over more years of service.
Cargo conversion is a circular economy play, not just a cost-saving measure.
It's one of the best examples of genuine circular economy in heavy industry. You're taking a product at the end of its first life, performing a deep inspection and refurbishment, and putting it into a second life that can last another 15 or 20 years. That's not recycling. Recycling means melting it down and starting over, which is energy intensive. This is reuse at the product level, which is much higher on the waste hierarchy.
The cargo market is the perfect second life, because cargo operations are less demanding in some ways. No passengers means no cabin pressurization at the same level, depending on the cargo. Fewer cycles per day, typically. Longer ground times between flights?
The operational profile of a cargo plane is gentler in several dimensions. Cargo flights tend to operate at night, fewer cycles per day, and the payloads are often denser, but the total flight hours per year are lower. That said, the pressurization is still there. The cargo hold is pressurized on most freighters because live animals and certain cargo types need it. But the point stands. The second life is often less stressful than the first.
We've got economics aligning with safety, aligning with sustainability. That almost never happens.
It really doesn't. Usually, you're trading one off against the others. Here, the conversion process makes the plane safer through deep inspection, it's cheaper than buying new, and it avoids the carbon cost of new manufacturing. The only thing working against it is passenger psychology. And that psychology is powerful. Airlines know that passengers get nervous about older planes, which is one reason they retire them while they're still perfectly airworthy. The cabin interior starts looking dated, the seats don't have USB ports, and suddenly the plane feels old, even though the structure is fine.
The airline industry has trained us to associate newness with safety. New plane smell equals safe. It's the same psychology that makes people nervous about hospitals that look old, even if the medical equipment is state-of-the-art.
It's a psychology that the cargo industry is completely immune to. A shipping manager at DHL doesn't care what year the plane was built. They care about the dispatch reliability rate, the maintenance records, and the cost per ton mile. That's it. So the cargo conversion market is this fascinating space where decisions are made purely on engineering and economics, without the consumer psychology overlay.
Which means we can look at the cargo conversion boom as a kind of natural experiment. If old airframes were dangerous, the cargo operators would be the first to know, and they'd stop converting them. The fact that they're booking conversion slots 3 years out tells you everything.
Over 300 slots booked through 2028. And these aren't speculative bookings. These are hard contracts with deposits. Amazon, FedEx, DHL, and a bunch of leasing companies are betting billions that these converted airframes will fly safely and profitably for another 15 to 20 years. They've done the engineering analysis. They've looked at the fatigue data. They've inspected the airframes. And they're writing checks.
Let's talk about what they're actually looking for when they evaluate an airframe for conversion. You mentioned cycle count earlier. What's the actual inspection process?
The first thing they look at is the cycle count and the corrosion history. A high-cycle 15-year-old plane that's been doing short hops in humid coastal environments is a much riskier conversion candidate than a low-cycle 30-year-old plane that's been doing long-haul over dry routes. Calendar age is almost irrelevant compared to cycle count and environmental exposure. Corrosion is the real killer. Aluminum doesn't fatigue in a perfectly linear way. It's the combination of cyclic loading and corrosion that creates the conditions for crack propagation.
If you're in the market for a used freighter conversion candidate, you want the plane that spent its life doing Denver to Phoenix, not Miami to San Juan.
Dry cycles, low corrosion. The conversion facility will do eddy current inspections on the fuselage skin, looking for subsurface cracks and corrosion. They'll do ultrasonic inspections on the wing spars, They'll borescope every area that's hard to access. If they find corrosion beyond certain limits, they can replace skin panels. If they find cracks in the spar, that's usually a no-go for conversion, because spar replacement is prohibitively expensive. But most airframes that have been properly maintained come through inspection clean or with minor issues that are straightforward to repair.
This is where the maintenance program matters more than anything. A plane that's been through a rigorous C-check and D-check schedule its whole life is going to look completely different under inspection than one that's had deferred maintenance.
The D-check is the big one. That's the heavy maintenance visit where they essentially take the plane apart. Seats out, interior panels off, access doors open. They inspect the structure down to the bare metal. That happens roughly every 6 to 10 years depending on the aircraft type and the operator's maintenance program. A plane that's been through 2 or 3 D-checks has been scrutinized at a level that most industrial equipment never sees. The maintenance records from those D-checks are what the conversion facility reviews first.
When a cargo operator buys a 20-year-old 737 for conversion, they're not buying a mystery. They're buying a documented history of structural health.
They're buying a medical record. And as a retired pediatrician, I can tell you that a patient with a complete medical history is a much better bet than one where you're guessing. The same principle applies. The airframe's logbooks tell you everything. Every repair, every inspection finding, every replaced component. You know exactly what you're getting.
There's the clinical analogy. I was wondering when it would show up.
You knew it was coming, but it's apt. The airframe's maintenance logs are its chart. You can see the trend lines. Is corrosion appearing more frequently? Are fatigue cracks showing up earlier between inspections? Those trend lines tell you whether the airframe is aging gracefully or heading for trouble.
What can civil aviation learn from the military approach here? The military seems to have a much higher tolerance for keeping old airframes in service.
The military's secret is that they don't treat the airframe as a single unit with a single expiration date. They treat it as an assembly of replaceable components, each with its own life limit. The wing center section has a life limit. The landing gear has a life limit. The fuselage pressure vessel has a life limit. When a component reaches its limit, you replace it or you do a life extension analysis to extend it. The concept of the airplane is too old doesn't really apply when you're managing at the component level.
Civil aviation does this too, but with a different philosophy. The airline treats the plane as an economic unit. When the maintenance costs start climbing, they retire the unit rather than replacing major structural components.
And the reason is partly economic and partly regulatory. The civil aviation regulatory framework is built around type certificates and airworthiness directives. It's easier to retire a plane at the economic sweet spot than to go through the engineering analysis to extend it. The military has its own regulatory framework and its own economic calculus. When a new bomber costs $700 million, spending $50 million on a life extension program looks like a bargain.
The B-21 Raider is going to cost something like $700 million per airframe. Suddenly, that Rolls-Royce re-engineering contract for the B-52 looks like pocket change.
The B-52 is still doing its mission. It's a standoff cruise missile platform now. It doesn't need to penetrate air defenses. It needs to loiter for long periods and launch missiles from hundreds of miles away. The airframe is perfectly suited to that mission regardless of its age. The mission defines the requirements, and the requirements define what good enough looks like. If the airframe meets the requirements, its age is irrelevant.
That's a useful framework for thinking about the cargo conversion trend, too. The mission is move boxes from A to B reliably and cheaply. A converted 737-800 does that mission about as well as a factory new freighter at a fraction of the capital cost. The mission doesn't care about the airframe's birthday.
The reliability data bears this out. Converted freighters have dispatch reliability rates that are competitive with new freighters. The engines might be mid-life, but they're on a maintenance program. The avionics get updated during conversion. The structure has been inspected and repaired. There's no inherent reason a 30-year-old converted freighter should be less reliable than a new one.
Let's address the passenger anxiety directly. Someone listening to this is going to fly next week, look up their plane, and see it's 28 years old. What should they actually care about instead?
They should care about the operator's maintenance program and safety culture. The age of the plane tells you nothing. The operator's safety record tells you a lot. An old plane operated by a carrier with a rigorous maintenance culture is dramatically safer than a new plane operated by a carrier that cuts corners. The maintenance culture is the safety feature. The plane is just the platform.
The maintenance culture is visible if you know where to look. The FAA and EASA publish audit results. The IATA operational safety audit is publicly available for member airlines. You can actually check whether your carrier passes.
Most passengers don't do that. They look at the seat fabric and the overhead bin design and make a gut judgment about safety based on aesthetics. It's completely understandable and completely wrong. The seat fabric has nothing to do with the structural integrity of the wing spar.
The seat fabric is the safety theater. The wing spar is the safety.
The cargo conversion trend is quietly demonstrating this at scale. Hundreds of former passenger planes are now flying cargo, many of them older than the plane's passengers are nervous about. They're flying safely, reliably, and profitably. The engineering case is proven. The economic case is proven. The sustainability case is compelling. The only thing that hasn't caught up is the public perception.
Daniel's instinct was right. This is a positive development, and the nervousness about old airplanes is a psychological artifact, not an engineering concern.
It's one of those rare cases where the thing that feels wrong is actually right, and the thing that feels right, newer is safer, is actually unsupported by the data. Newer might be more fuel efficient. It might have better in-flight entertainment, it might be quieter, but it's not inherently safer. Safety comes from maintenance, inspection, and operational discipline. Those things are independent of the airframe's age.
Which brings us to the forward-looking question. Everything we've talked about applies to aluminum airframes. The 737, the 747, the 767, the A30T family. These are aluminum fuselages with well-understood fatigue behavior. We know how aluminum cracks. We know how to inspect for it. We've got decades of data. But the next generation, the 787 Dreamliner, the A350, those are composite fuselages.
Composite fatigue behavior is fundamentally different from aluminum. Aluminum fatigue is relatively predictable. Cracks initiate at stress concentrators. They propagate at measurable rates, and we have well-established inspection techniques to find them before they become critical. Composite fatigue is more complex. Damage can occur internally between layers without being visible on the surface. The failure modes are different. The inspection techniques are different and less mature.
The question is whether a 787 will be convertible to a freighter in 25 years the way a 737 is today.
There are already 7 IDC-7 freighter conversion programs in development, but they're early. The engineering challenges are different. The fatigue behavior of composites over very long timescales isn't as well understood simply because we don't have 70 years of data the way we do with aluminum. The B-52 dataset is aluminum. The 737 dataset is aluminum. We know what aluminum does over 100 years of service. Composites haven't been flying long enough to have that data.
The golden age of airframe life extension might actually be right now, with the aluminum generation. We've got the data, we've got the inspection techniques, we've got the conversion infrastructure. The 737 and A320 conversions are happening at a scale and with a confidence that might not be replicable with the composite generation for decades.
That's a really interesting point. The aluminum airframes flying today might end up having longer total service lives than the composite airframes that are replacing them, simply because we understand them better. The known quantity with a proven inspection regime beats the unknown quantity with theoretical advantages.
There's a lesson there about technology transitions in general. The new thing isn't always better in every dimension. Sometimes the mature technology has advantages that the early adopters of the new thing won't realize they're missing until decades later.
That connects back to the sustainability point Daniel raised. The most sustainable airplane is the one that already exists. The carbon has been spent, the supply chain has been paid for, the manufacturing energy has been consumed. Keeping it flying safely for as long as possible is almost always the best environmental choice, regardless of how efficient the new one is. The new one has to amortize its production carbon before it can start being greener than the old one, and that can take a decade or more of service.
The cargo conversion boom isn't just a business story. It's a case study in how to think about sustainability in heavy industry. Don't scrap it. Inspect it, refurbish it, repurpose it, and fly it for another 20 years.
Do it safely. That's the key. This isn't about cutting corners or accepting higher risk. It's about recognizing that maintenance and inspection can achieve safety levels that are indistinguishable from new equipment at a fraction of the environmental and economic cost. The data supports it. The operators are betting on it. The only thing lagging is the public's intuition.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The sport of real tennis, played indoors with asymmetric walls and sloping roofs, gave us the word love for zero. Not from the French lerf meaning egg, as commonly claimed, but likely from the idea of playing for love rather than money, meaning you had nothing at stake.
I've been mispronouncing lerf for years for no reason.
So the open question we're left with is whether the composite generation will be as extendable as the aluminum generation. We won't know for another 20 or 30 years. But for now, the cargo conversion boom is one of those rare stories where economics, safety, and sustainability all point in the same direction. It's not about flying old planes. It's about flying well-maintained planes, regardless of what year they were built.
Next time you're on a plane, and you notice the seat fabric looks a little dated, remember? The wing spar doesn't care what year it is.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show.
We're at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.